Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to today's Caffeine for the Soul. And today I'm going to share an excerpt from the new audiobook edition of The Space Within, available at all good, available at all good online retailers near you. Enjoy. Chapter 1. How to be more of who you really are. You are not who you think you are. You are the space where thoughts arise. The story of me. Why are you unhappy? Because 99.9% of everything you think and of everything you do is for yourself, and there isn't one. Wei Wu Wei. In the beginning, there was a field of infinite possibility and pure potential called the universal mind. Then somewhere in the midst of the universal mind, the thought of you appeared. That thought of you became conscious of itself and called itself me. For many years, me lived and played happily in the midst of the garden of everything. But over time, it began to separate and individuate. It went to school and grew up to be an independent, free-thinking, empowered human being, making its way in the world, navigating by the rulebook it had accumulated along the way, and using discipline and willpower as its primary engine. Me grew very strong and enjoyed flexing its muscles and developing its personal power. It forgot all about the universal mind that had once been its constant companion. Eventually, me began to struggle, as all of us do. It was lonely and felt insecure and did everything in its power to make sure that no one ever saw through its facade. It wasn't having a bad life, at least not some of the time, but something was missing. Then one day, me heard about something called the infinite. It sounded very important and very grand, and the descriptions of the great peace that could be felt when one touched the infinite sounded like the most beautiful thing me had ever heard. But me was too smart to fall for that one again. After all, the writers of the rulebook inside me's head had already told it all about a supernatural being who lived in the sky. Since many of the things me had been told after being born had turned out to be untrue, me turned its back on its image of the infinite and carried on its own, struggling more and more, but proud of its autonomy and ability to think for itself. Until one day, me met the infinite. It looked nothing like the image me had made up in its head, yet it seemed strangely familiar. Much to me's surprise, the more time it spent with the infinite, the better life got. In fact, hanging out in the infinite felt like going home to a place me didn't even remember. Soon, me and the infinite were spending nearly all of their time together. Eventually, me began to think of itself less and less as me, and more as a drop in the infinite ocean. Then one day, me disappeared. Some said that me had died. Others that me had become enlightened. But the infinite potential of the universal mind remained and continues on to this day. One truth, two questions, three principles. In my work as a transformative coach, I've noticed that regardless of whether a client has come to solve a problem, reach a goal, improve a relationship, or unleash their potential, what they really want is the experience of coming alive. It's as if at some level they know they're asleep to the deeper dimensions of life, and they want to wake up and live from a more connected place inside themselves. So there are really only two questions I'm asking in the back of my mind that are guiding me as to what direction to take in our work together. One, do they know where their experience is coming from? When Sid Banks had his enlightenment experience, he saw that all his insecurities and problems were made of thought, and had little or nothing to do with the circumstances of his life. It's not that there isn't a world out there, but that our experience of it is 100% an experience of our own thinking. This is why I often call this work the inside-out understanding. Until someone begins to recognize that thought is the source of experience, as opposed to genetics, environment, personal history, or any other external circumstance, they have no choice but to focus their energies on fixing, changing, or otherwise altering those external factors in an attempt to enhance and improve their experience of life. Once they recognize thought as the missing link between the infinite creative potential of the mind and the individual experience of life that they're having, the compulsion to do something to improve their plight diminishes. This not only leaves them in a fairly consistent state of well-being regardless of circumstance, it also opens them up to fresh new thinking that makes effecting changes in the world significantly easier. From this space of well-being, a second question begins to emerge. 2. Do they know that they're God? One of my colleagues in the Inside Out Understanding, Mark Howard, told me a story about how he first learned to go deeper into the space within with his clients. Early in his career, he developed a reputation for helping people addicted to drugs and alcohol, and was proud of the work he was doing. He was boasting a bit to one of his teachers when, to his surprise, the teacher said to him, "It's wonderful that you're helping these people overcome their addictions, but do you know that they're God?" That one question really hit home, and he realized that he was settling for a very small change in his clients relative to what was possible. He could see that once they knew that they were God, they would begin to realize the limitless potential of their true nature. I still get uncomfortable from time to time when I share stories like this, as my own habitual thinking about God, religion, and spirit gets all muddled up, and I struggle to separate the baby from the bathwater. But when I say God, I'm not talking religion. I'm simply pointing as best I can to the impersonal energy and intelligence behind life that causes grass to grow, cuts to heal, rain to fall, and inspiration to strike. It's the invisible but pervasive energy of spirit that, in the words of the physicist David Bohm, infuses all living things and is that which is truly alive in living systems. We are of that invisible life energy in the same way that a wave is of the ocean or a cloud is of the sky. When people think they're nothing more than a body and brain, they feel left to their own devices, only able to achieve as much as their physical limitations and the realities of their environment and upbringing will allow. But when they become aware of a deeper intelligence behind their thinking as an ever-present source of both wisdom and fresh possibility, a wider world opens up to them. Most of us recognize that at times we are able to access a wisdom which seems to come from somewhere beyond our personal data bank and contains information and ideas outside our current knowledge. This wisdom and the insights that come from it sometimes gain an almost mythical status in our thinking, and a lot of superstition often crops up around their appearance. Yet when we come to see that we can have fresh new thinking at any moment, wisdom stops looking like a big deal or a mystical process, and appears to us as a function of the natural resource of a deeper mind, the ever-present spiritual energy behind life. As we learn more about the nature of this universal mind, and begin to glimpse more of its infinite creative potential, we come to rely on it more and more in a variety of situations. We allow ourselves to become reflective and receptive to this wisdom that seems to exist somewhere beyond the reach of our own experience. And in so doing, we tap into the unknown as the very source of both inspiration and creation. Mind is just one of the three fundamental principles that sit identified as being at the heart of the human experience. When we talk about principles, we're talking about things in their most elemental form, that irreducible level at which things have been made as simple as possible, but not simpler. Here's how Sid articulated the three principles in his book, The Missing Link. The universal mind, or the impersonal mind, is constant and unchangeable. The personal mind is in a perpetual state of change. All humans have the inner ability to synchronize their personal mind with their impersonal mind to bring harmony into their lives. Consciousness is the gift of awareness. Consciousness allows the recognition of form, form being the expression of thought. Mental health lies within the consciousness of all human beings, but it is shrouded and held prisoner by our own erroneous thoughts. This is why we must look past our contaminated thoughts to find the purity and wisdom that lie inside our own consciousness. Thought is the creative agent we use to direct ourselves through life. Thought is the master key that opens the world of reality to all living creatures. Thought is not reality, yet it is through thought that our realities are created. So what does all this mean? It means that there is an extraordinary creative potential which lies largely dormant inside human beings. Mind. That we have the capacity to experience that potential when we look past the illusion of our own thinking. Consciousness. And that there is a creative force, thought, which serves as a vehicle for creating our personal reality. But if mind, consciousness, and thought are what makes up our reality, there's another question remaining. Who are we? A case of mistaken identity. Imagine that Bill Gates comes to you for business coaching. At first, you're puzzled because it would seem that Bill Gates doesn't really need business coaching. But then you realize that he has amnesia and has no idea who he is. Here's the question. Do you use your sessions to try to give him business advice? Or do you spend your time together doing everything you can to help him remember who he really is and what he's really got going for him? While it may or may not take a bit longer to work toward him remembering his true identity than to offer your personal insights into how best to handle the latest crisis or opportunity at Microsoft, the difference in outcome is liable to be phenomenal. But what if you're the one with amnesia? Are you who you think you are? Is your body merely an icon in the game of life with a name and a backstory that tells you how well or poorly your character is meant to play the game? To view the question of who you really are in a different light, consider the question of the university as laid out by British philosopher Gilbert Ryle in his book The Concept of Mind. A foreigner visiting Oxford or Cambridge for the first time is shown a number of colleges, libraries, playing fields, museums, scientific departments, and administrative offices. He then asks, "But where is the university? I have seen where the members of the colleges live, where the registrar works, where the scientists experiment, and the rest. But I have not yet seen the university in which reside and work the members of your university." So where is the university really? Is it in A, the buildings and grounds? B, the students and professors? C, the interplay between them? D, the spirit of education that infuses them all with university-like qualities? Or E, all or none of the above? Substitute the self for the university, and we have the paradox at the heart of all attempts at self-improvement. Where is the separate self that we are trying to improve? Is it in A, our mind and body? B, our thoughts and emotions? C, our behavior? D, the spirit that animates us, what Ryle called the ghost in the machine? Or E, all or none of the above? It seems to me that there is no one thing that can be pointed to as the university, even though we can identify its many parts. Similarly, there is no one separate self to be improved. In the midst of my early attempts at spiritual spelunking, I read in numerous texts that the self was like an onion. As an experiment, I bought an actual onion from my local greengrocer, took it to Hyde Park, and tried to peel away the layers to see what lay at its core. To my initial disappointment, there was no core. Even the smallest part of the center could be peeled away as just another skin. This is the nihilistic view of the self, that because there is nothing but emptiness at our core, there is no meaning, purpose, or value to our life. But a few moments later, I had a Kensho experience, a momentary glimpse of the vastness of our true nature. For the nothingness at the core of the onion that had seemed so empty a moment before was suddenly filled with everything: the entire park, the city of London, and the universe beyond. From nothing came everything. From emptiness came a fullness of feeling that I can remember to this day. And this is the good news about our true nature. Just as we don't need to find the real university in order to benefit from its apparent existence, we don't need to pump up the separate self in order to live a full and rich and meaningful life. We are nothing, but we are also everything. And in that paradox lies the secret to pretty much everything. It's something like this, but not this. Imagine for a moment that you are a drop of water. As it happens, you are a very unique little drop, beautifully shaped with only a cute little distortion in the way you reflect the light. People praise your beauty, and in time you come to believe that you are special. But as time goes on, you become lonely. You long for the companionship of another drop of water who will love you as you love it and help you feel less alone. You find that other, or you don't. You fall in love, or you don't. And then one day it starts to rain. 7 billion drops of rain fall in a single afternoon, and you are no longer alone. Briefly, you touch mitochondria with a single raindrop, and before you know it, two have become one. You are still alone, but you are larger than before. With each drop of water you merge with, your entire being expands until all 7 billion drops become one ocean. And you are still alone, and all is well. Finding your way back home. In his classic book, The Road Less Traveled, author M. Scott Peck shares the following analogy. If one wants to climb mountains, one must have a good base camp, a place where there are shelters and provisions, where one may receive nurture and rest before one ventures forth again to seek another summit. Successful mountain climbers know that they must spend at least as much time, if not more, in tending to their base camp as we do in climbing mountains, for their survival is dependent upon their seeing to it that their base camp is sturdily constructed and well stocked. While he was using the analogy in the context of what it takes to have a successful marriage, the same is true for us as individuals. If we want to achieve great things in life, it's necessary to spend at least as much time, if not more, in tending to our base camp as we actually do in climbing mountains. What is base camp for us? It is our essential spiritual, in other words, non-physical, nature, our connection to the whole. There is a deeper part of all of us that remains unchanged, regardless of what our body and personality have been through in life. It is the innate well-being that we were born into, the innate wisdom that guided us at key moments in our life when we suddenly knew what to do from a place which seemed somehow outside our normal consciousness, yet absolutely right and true. When we are in touch with that place, we have a sense of expansiveness and possibility. The world feels vast, yet we feel up to the challenge of living in it, because we too at this level of understanding are vast. It is the space where miracles happen, predictable synchronicities which deliver, as W.H. Murray said in the Scottish Himalayan Expedition, unforeseen incidents, meetings, and material assistance which no man could have dreamt would have come his way. From this place, we feel we can take on the world, because in a very real way, we are the world. So why do we ever lose sight of base camp? Why do we so often feel small and less than and not enough? Why is it that one minute we're up for anything and the next we're good for nothing? Because we live in a world of unrecognized thought. Thought is the architect of both hope and despair, the source of every color in the emotional rainbow. Without thought, there would be no delineation in our world, like the pure clarity of light before it passes through a prism and bursts into a kaleidoscope of color. But unrecognized thought demands our attention and fills our consciousness. And when we get caught up in thought, we lose our way. It's like being disoriented by mist rolling into base camp. Whether the mist of thought takes the form of a beautiful vision or an icy chill, it can blind us to what is already present and make us feel as though we need to go stumbling about in search of instant remedies instead of waiting for the mist to clear. In fact, you don't even have to wait. You can just close your eyes to the mist, turn away from the noise, and realize that no matter where you are in your life or in the world, you're never more than one thought away from home. Unlike in the mountain climbing metaphor, you take your base camp with you on every climb. Whether or not you're aware of that fact is the only variable. You're already home. You always were. It's just that when you're not preoccupied with your own thinking, it's easier to feel it. And when you know that you can climb mountains in the world without ever leaving home base, going out and trying new things becomes a lot less scary and a lot more fun.